Welcome to the Virtual Team Heroes podcast. Here you will get tips and insights what you can do to succeed in the digital work environment. Have fun! Welcome to another episode in the Virtual Team Heroes podcast. And today, I'm very happy I can speak with Jennifer Riggins from the Arginext community in the UK. And we would like to speak about psychological safety in the workplace because we both see it's a very important topic at the moment and it's becoming more and more important in the future workplace. Yes, and we would like to cover this in this episode. And hi, Jennifer, I'm very, very happy I have you here in this episode for as an interview partner, or it should be in a conversation. And yeah, introduce yourself a bit so that our listeners get to know you, what you're doing, where you're from, and yeah, just to get to know you.
Hi, Nadine. I'm Jennifer Riggins. I am a tech storyteller, which means I do various things around the tech world. So, but I'm not technical. I've never coded a day in my life. It can be mostly journalism or podcast hosting, and including a podcast, what we talk about when we want to talk about tech, a new project I'm working on. And the reason I'm here today is a long-term passion project I've been working on has been the Arginext community, which is a community for experimentation with an agile mindset, advice, support, and psychological safety. And Nadine, I believe you are hosting a workshop at our upcoming first edition event on a day of psychological safety, which is just, especially after the last year we've had, we're in May 2021 now, we need a focus on that. We found that the companies that were most successful in 2020, because I was the sudden, by coincidence, COVID reporter, if you cover the culture side of tech at the New Stack and at other publications, definitely there were some architectural, infrastructural similarities with the tech-backed companies, which basically is every company right now, any large company is tech, or any company that was successful embraced technology because they had to do delivery or something last year. But the thing, the common thread that wove between them all, the success cases, were that people were safe to fail, that there was a sense of belonging in the company. They did stupid things that may have been stupid and were burnt out of now, like quizzes and party nights and things, but they were successful because they took care of the whole person coming to the office, even though they were coming remotely, mostly, though still there were essential workers. And they took care of the whole person. They embraced the whole person instead of saying, this is work, this is home, because that all went to hell this last year. Everything was everything.
Yeah, let's maybe start with the term psychological safety. I think it's not a new one. It's more common in the agile workplace for the last year, but now companies and leaders and teams have to deal with that. And for them, or for most of them, it's a new term, psychological safety, and they wonder, oh, what's there? Is it about, do I have to be a psychologist now when I lead a team? What is psychology safety and why it's more becoming more important in the workplace we have, in the hybrid workplace, virtual workplace? What's changing now in companies?
For your, I guess to your paraphrase, opinion? Yeah, to paraphrase Nirvana, psychological safety is come as you are, come as you were. If we're to be successful and we're supposed to move fast and feel safe in releasing code, to feel safe in experimenting at work, and to be, feel safe in speaking up if we're not sure about something is right. Look what's happening at Google and other industries, like other companies are trying to squash whistleblowers or people, the truth, talking the truth at companies. If you want to be successful and truly innovative, people have to feel safe to fail, which is psychological safety. Is it measurable? I don't know. So maybe it's kind of ironic that it's so popular in the agile space, but also it's very popular in the HR space, anything management, leadership, it is a hot hashtag. It is a buzzword, but I think it's a dramatic demand. There's a dramatic demand for it. And the companies that embraced that in the cultural change, in the suddenly moving to remote work, to hybrid work soon or now, they're the ones that were most successful. So I think everyone's talking about how people can bring their whole selves to work, because people suddenly were. Kids were at home. People, you were in people's homes. You were seeing their homes. And they don't want to go back to that. Like, yeah, maybe some people do want to go back to the office. That works for some people totally, especially if you live by yourself or something. Or maybe you want to go back to the office a couple days a week. That's a moment for collaboration. Or once a month, you get together for a week, like a more of a retreat, more productive, things like that. Instead of checking the boxes, it's about trusting people to be who they want to be, who they are, and including them.
Yes, it's very important that you have focus on personal preferences in the workplace. People, and also now people, they say, I want to go back to the office because I feel safe there, I have more focus, I'm productive, and it's okay. And there are people who say, okay, I would like to do remotely, work remotely 100%. And some people say, I go back for socializing only, or have some training or workshops with my colleagues. But then people have to speak up or feel that they can speak up about their preferences, and that leaders don't say, you have to go back to the office, without asking their preferences. And I think the safety workplace, it's all psychological safety, is important in the hybrid workplace, because you have different configurations and contexts people work in, and they have to speak up how they feel, if they have all the information to do the work, or when the mistakes happen, where to address this? Can I address this when I'm alone at home or at the workplace? Can I give feedback on that? So speaking up, when I'm in the office, I always have the same context where I work in. So I recognize more from people when they feel bad or when mistakes happen. You speak up, or people feel more safer speaking up or ask a colleague than when you are at home alone. Or I think it's also, I don't know what's your opinion, it's also a difference between introvert people and extrovert people. I think the introverts don't speak that much up than the extroverts, or they don't know how to connect with people. So you have also isolation. So this whole hybrid or virtual work environment, it's a totally different context for working.
Hybrid has been the thing. If you talk to like Judy Reese or Lisette Sutherland, who are part of our community and are remote experts, they've always, for years, Pilar Orti, they've always spoken up, avoid hybrid meetings whenever possible. There are certain tricks you can do with a hybrid meeting, like the person that's remote gets always the right to speak first. I don't think most teams do this, but they're in the less privileged side. But when you talk about hybrid teams, which the software industry should logically be better at than most, because they've always worked with offshoring and outsourcing, but have they treated that equally? But it's a real risk for creating inequality. The number one reason for companies to go hybrid or to bring people back to the office is not a culture, it's not their teams, it's real estate. If they're not up on their lease in the next 6 months, they want people back in the office because they're paying for that. Whenever you're thinking about the bottom line like that, you're never thinking about your staff's well-being. I think the main problem that happened in 2020, or the hottest hashtag, is not even psychological safety, it's burnout.
Yes.
But the statistic, and again, I come with a reference of a tech industry, our event, Psychological Safety, is open much broader than that, because it touches on anyone, especially if you're on a leadership position or you're trying to find a way to make your work less toxic. Though if you work at a toxic culture, we'll help you find a new job.
Yeah.
It's not fixable, but the statistic was 68% of people in the tech industry were burnt out in 2020, but 61% were burnt out in 2019. So 7% because of the pandemic doesn't seem like that dramatic of an increase. There's a problem. We're addicted to burnout, and that's not okay. And people are not doing their best work because they're doing this presenteeism, and that gets worse when you're in like a hybrid situation where the remote workers have to pretend they're always working or work harder and compete to who's working later during the day.
Yeah.
And that's not okay. So the problem when you bring hybrid is, who gets it? Because as my friend Maya Middlemiss, who also works in the space like you do in the remote work industry, I guess it's an industry now, right?
It's becoming an industry.
She pointed out how usually traditionally flexible work came with status in the normal corporate environment. If you were a high enough level, you not only had an office where you didn't have the often toxic or very damaging, especially for introvert, open office space. We've found open offices don't really work, but you didn't even have to worry about that because you probably had an office at that point. And then you also had the ability to work from home because you had reached that point of trust. So it was considered almost like a part of a bonus structure or something. So now you have to decide who gets the right to work from home when. And then there's also a whole other level of logistics because you can't have everyone come in the office on Wednesdays now because offices are downsizing. And then there's the offshoot of that, like whole the city of London, which is the financial district of London, is dying a bit because a lot of companies, at least one in six companies, aren't going back to an office at all, which is great. But then there are whole industries, there's Pret, there's all these different places built around it. So it's obscenely more complex hybrid is, and it involves so many more human characteristics and the ability to speak up and have a voice than any other combination than remote fully or fully in person. It's hard.
I don't have any overview of what's happening with the financial district in Frankfurt. So I have to,
yeah, I'm sure.
The big skyscrapers. But I know companies that said, oh, we're switching the office to socializing place, or you don't have a room for yourself now, or with a fixed desk you sit on. So I know companies that say, okay, no desk, no fixed desk, and you come as you are when you would like to socialize. And I don't know what's happening. I mean, they're building many skyscrapers at the moment in Frankfurt, but they started before the pandemic, and I don't know what's happening now.
Canary Wharf, we were there for the first time, which is the other financial district of London that was kind of like artificially built. Canary Wharf, we were there this weekend for the first time just for socialize. And I mean, there's like 20 new skyscrapers. They did not stop building in the last year and a half, but I don't know who's going to occupy them.
Yeah, I don't know either. So let's see. It's very interesting. But I think burnout, it's caused by bad organization. Or Zoom fatigue is also bad organization. Balancing out synchronous and asynchronous work, you need the right balance. I know team leaders to say you should be online 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. the whole time, or they have meetings from the morning to the whole day. So it's bad organization. And psychological safety in a hybrid workplace, a virtual workplace, it's for me, it's also to speak about mental health. So people mm-hmm. feel safe to speak out, I'm burnt out, or I'm not burnt out, but I feel I have a huge workload. I'm stressed from too many online meetings, because working online is a totally different thing than working, collaborating face-to-face or face-to-face meeting. online meetings need much more, it's much more stressful. There's also a good study from the Stanford University, why online meetings are so stressful for people. Always looking at, like, into the mirror, you see yourself all the time, it's one factor. But people have to speak out about mental health. And I know people have fear when they speak about, or I have issues with mental health at the moment because of all the circumstances, that colleagues and leaders say, you are underperformer, because they used to be an underperformer when they say, I have issues with mental health. But now it's switching. When you have issues with mental health, you are not an underperformer, or you have to be, you have to feel safe that you're not quote an underperformer. You say, okay, we should overthink our whole organization and communication in that workplace. It is also a huge factor for me in the hybrid workplace.
It's really bad how we've stigmatized mental health issues for so long. And I can't speak outside the tech lens. It seems like it's a trend to be very open about your mental health issues. I'm not sure if that pendulum will swing back because people will get retribution or not. The tech industry is a special circumstance where we have more privilege than most, where there's this huge talent gap still, and there's always another job around the corner. But that also comes with privilege, like people of color, people that are caretakers for other people, whether little or older, not people that have, especially people in the US, have six figures of academic debt plus other debt. Like, it's not something we can say. We look at it as everyone has privilege, just quit their job if they don't like it. That's not really the case. And that's sad, but at least burnout is being talked about, and burnout has to be talked about in a different way than depression and bipolar disorder and ADHD and things like that, because burnout is often external factors causing it. Yes. But both need to be talked about. And I think psychological safety is bring your whole self to work, which is being open about that. But also it's your choice to self-identify or not. When it's something like race, or maybe gender, it's, you don't get to self-identify either. Like, you just come to it, which is a whole other level of inequality. And we have to remember that when we are forcing people, and I say people, not just adults, because I know kids that were on Zoom 6 hours a day, like 6-year-olds that were on Zoom 6 hours a day this last year. You're putting people at risk when you're in their homes. So when you are embracing remote work, or you embracing work from home strategy, you have to remember not everyone can turn on their camera every time. Like, it's not okay, like, to be in someone's personal space all the time. And guess what? Virtual backgrounds didn't work for everyone. They were beheading Black people for months. Zoom was literally beheading Black people, so they couldn't take advantage of virtual backgrounds, or it will cut off certain hairstyles, or, and it's just not equal, because tech isn't equal. Tech is not neutral.
Yeah.
Tech is not apolitical.
Psychological safety has always to do with diversity, or more, being more diverse in the team. And
which we know is better for innovation. Like, it's, I think we both said innovation at the same time. Like, we are certain that psychological safety, diversity, equity, inclusion lead to better teams, better products, better innovation.
More creativity as well. When you have more inclusion and, being diverse, people giving a voice, then you have also more creativity in the workplace. It's also a benefit. So now we know more about what's happening at the moment and what are the benefits. Let's talk about what can leaders do to make a workplace safe, or to ensure psychological safety. I know it's a broad topic. And Yeah, but maybe how can we start, or what should we consider when we would like?
It's a hard place because every single role has something different they can do. Because leaders is a role, but it's not the only one. Like HR, the whole HR system needs to be destroyed. Like, notice that I'm avoiding human resources because we're not resources, like the plague. Oh, but yeah, there's a plague going on, so maybe we can't use that turn of phrase anymore. But because everything in our current structure, our current white supremacist structure, there's no other way to describe it than that. Everything in the current structure is built to maintain the current structure, and the current structure has to change. It has to completely be torn apart back from things like requiring a university degree for a technical job that you can prove your ability, or requiring a university degree. I'm 37. My university degree was in political science. I loved it. It did nothing. It has no value probably on my day to day besides the ability to bullshit well. You need to hire different people. You need to work hard, and it's hard. In everything we do, we need to work to be more diverse. It's extra effort. You have to be willing to put in that extra effort. You need to create a safe space, like guidelines and principles that support you being able to speak up, letting people know they can speak up, not doing a recommendation or a review, like an annual review. What a stupid thing. Like, you're not having a conversation with people. Doing really thoughtful onboarding, like really allowing people to bring their whole selves. I have a friend who is autism spectrum, and they, at their current company, their new company, they were able to write how they prefer to be communicated with, how they work best. Should not everyone be having this conversation when you start at a company? How you work best, like what makes you most successful in terms of communication? When people are leaving a company, there definitely should be exit interviews. And usually they're not. And there's this assumption. I heard this statistic, and the person, I don't have the citation of it, so I'm not sure if it's true, but it sounds great. It said 92% of workplaces believe people are leaving for money. Only 12% of people are leaving for money. People by far and large are leaving an organization because of the management.
Yes.
Like, because they have a bad manager, far and large. But companies think it's because of money. But most people, especially when you're talking about tech, are making enough money that, or in management positions too, are making enough money that that's not the motivator anymore. It's that they want to get away from a toxic manager. So we need to be asking a lot of questions. And that's kind of where this conference came about, the psychological safety one, on June 11th. Our day of psychological safety is because people want to talk about it more and experiment. And we're still, 20 years ago, agile was defined. We're still defining what psychological safety is. And I think it's something that's way harder to define because everyone needs to be a part of that definition. Agile was defined by, I think, 14 white men. Definitely white men. I'm just not sure the number is correct, just to clarify. Everyone has to be a part of defining that definition. It can't just be leadership. It needs to be everyone, but everyone has to be able to feel safe to speak up.
Yes, you're right. It's also the colleagues. They have to speak up in the team, not when you have, okay, we have a good leader and you say you can speak up, and you speak up and your colleagues say bad things about it, it's also a bad issue. So everybody should have an open mindset for speaking up. I think it's a mindset shift. And it's interesting what you're saying, that people don't leave the company because of money, but because of other issues or toxic management. I think it's also important that people, or that companies give are purpose driven, give people a purpose to work there. And then giving people a purpose to working there, it's also getting to know your people, what are their own motivators and what their upper preferences. Mm-hmm. And I think when people or leaders ask me where to start, I would recommend them or do a reflection. How often do you reach out to your people, not to your team, but to each single person? Like we have this management by walking around in your office. Do you do this in the hybrid workplace, in the virtual workplace? Do you check in with your employees? And okay, you have team stand-ups maybe, but it's also important to check in with each person. And just ask, how do you feel? Do you have any problems? Do you have all information? Do you have all resources? Just a weekly check-ins. I think that's something where you can start at the leader, and also to build trust that you can speak out, and that a single check-ins is the one-on-one in a trusted place. Where you can also say, oh, I have my workload is too much, or I'm stressed, we have so many meetings, or my kids are at home in the homeschooling, I'm not productive in that time when you think I'm productive, or something like that. Yeah. So the one-ones, it's always forgotten, always. And it's
asynchronous communication. They said part of the burnout was everyone had more meetings last year or this year still. Managers more than anybody, and they had this extra burden of organizing and orchestrating all those meetings. So maybe you need to make meetings more productive. Like, how are you feeling? How are you doing? Those are productive meetings, and look at that as productivity to get new information. And then the stand-ups are often just updates. So maybe they can be written in a Slack channel where they disappear, because that isn't a long term. I don't know. One thing I keep thinking about is, I think for a lot of people, psychological safety is going to be a huge motivator for hiring now. And like you said, the purpose-driven organization, there are a lot of jobs right now. All of a sudden, we went from, famine to everything, like deluge, I forget the turn of phrase. It's just everywhere, feast. We went from famine to feast, and there are tons of jobs. And I think it's going to make a difference, because there are companies having the backlash in the other direction. Goldman Sachs is saying it's an aberration, and they want people into the office the entire time, where 2/3 of all of those types of banks and investment banks and things like that have said they're going to move to flexible work because people want it. Guess where most people are going to go? There will be some people that want to be in the office all the time, so that's fine, but they're going to have trouble just attracting people. Or Basecamp, which is this tiny company, like 50, 60 people, but the managers, the two founders, have written these books on management that people idolize because we deify our tech bros like they're gods. And then guess what happens? They wrote like this treatise of idiocy in the form of a blog saying they don't want to do 360 degree reviews because they're too positive. They don't want any diversity, inclusion, or politics discussed in the workplace because tech is apolitical and neutral. Kim Creighton's guiding principles. The first one is tech is not neutral nor apolitical. Mm-hmm. It's inherently not. And they lost like 2/3 of their staff in 1 week. And they're now doubling down and tripling down. Like, we're doing great. We're hiring new people. You had people that were 10, 15 years working for that company, or at least 10 years, that all quit their jobs in one
imagine
week.
Imagine how much knowledge they have from the company.
And from the technology too, it's crazy. Yeah, and they just went over and over again and doubled down, tripled down on that. And they lost people. And it's inherent, because I was paying attention to who was quitting, because that's always interesting, because it is a white privilege thing. The people that were quitting very publicly that I saw were all white, which may mean it's not a diverse company, or it may mean people can't afford to quit, things like that. But one person that quit is death. And all I could think of is every moment of his life is political. Everything is built for a hearing person's world. Podcast, we're on a podcast right now. Hopefully we'll do subtitles or closed captioning on the YouTube video version, but everything is political for him. And now suddenly he has to quit because he's not allowed to be political. And they had just were about to start having a diversity and inclusion committee. And they were like, no, it must stop. There was no reason, like people were fine, but obviously that is a toxic work environment. So there is a backlash, like, you know, cancel culture or whatever. But I think it's going to be, if you can somehow prove, and I guess the way to prove is a glass door, people talking. People talk about their companies, and they're either going to do what is called the t-shirt test. They're going to wear the t-shirt of their company when they're out with their friends, or they're going to talk shit. And that's, you don't want to be that company because you're not going to be able to recruit the best talent in any field. And you're not going to be able to recruit a team that is diverse and inclusive and embraces belonging, because word spreads online faster than ever.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. So it's a broad topic it's about mental health, burnout. It's about inclusion, diversity, giving people a voice that they can speak up. It's about feedback, check-ins, one-on-ones, talking about feeling, isolation. I think the anchor of all of this is having a good communication, or to avoid communication bias. I know so many leaders, they think they can communicate in the virtual workplace or hybrid workplace as they do in the office. And they haven't learned to write messages correctly so that they are understood, or that people know what their intentions are, what they mean. Because there's also studies that people interpret messages or written messages are more negative than positive. And you have to, when you have asynchronous work, you have more written messages, the more written documentation.
Should, yeah.
And more written, not more emails, but more in the chat. Or so people have to learn how to write messages that people get the right messages, and not the negative messages, but it's also the communication bias we have in the workplace. How to communicate something in such a workplace that people feel understood and feel safe and know what to do. And when you have leader also only writing short sentences, I mean, I'm based in Germany and we are more direct. So you have more direct communication. It's our culture. And when you're not used to it, it's a bit rude.
Pigeon management. But come in and
shit face to face, it's very practical communication. But when you have it in the hybrid workplace, even for Germans, it's very rude communication when you have a very, very direct communication. So people have to learn to communicate correctly in such a workplace to ensure psychological safety. And because when you have, I think communication, it's very important to build trust, and trust is the key factor for good collaboration.
And transparency, yeah. Something I'll send to you that include in the show notes is Lisette Sutherland's talk about team agreements, especially for remote teams, but also hybrid teams. Like, how are you going to communicate? Because if you have hybrid or remote teams, they're going to become more international. It means you get to hire the best person for the job, no matter where they live. But that means, when are core hours when you're working? What time zone are you talking in? Are you talking in time zone, or do you have to tag everything with the time zone, which is also fine? Where do you communicate what thing? Like, how do you create long-term, more archival documents? Versus what is appropriate for Slack, where things could get lost if you have over 10,000 messages and you're not paying for that expensive premium Slack, things like that. So yeah, that's something. It was interesting with the our Day of Psychological Safety by AgiNext.
Yeah, I would like to
20 of them.
To yeah. describe it, what we are doing on this day, where can people register, what are the speakers, the workshops, and what can people expect?
It was an interesting experiment because we didn't invite that many people. We invited the keynote, and I think, yeah, I invited people for my ethics panel because that's my ethics panel, so that's fine. But everything else, everyone applied, and we encouraged partners or more to apply because everyone's sick of the one-way webinar. And we've done many events. This is our first focused on psychological safety, but we've done many online, like, and we do something different. So half of it's not even recorded. Nothing's recorded ahead. Everything's live because it's for an experience, because we're all bored of webinars and live streams. Sorry to those watching this now. Hopefully this is not disinteresting because it's basically a live stream or a recorded interview. But we crave interaction, but I don't think everyone's ready to be in person. And we've also decided for our normal October Agile Tour London, we will not have it in person yet. Hopefully for AgiNext, our flagship event for Advanced Agile is next March, 2022. Gosh, it will be in person or it will be hybrid itself. We will find a way to make it work. We're figuring that out still, but we don't think everyone's comfortable with being in one place now. Mm-hmm. And we think we've nailed it. Our events are in a tool called Spatial Chat. Use Chrome only. It's very buggy in anything else, but it's great in Chrome. And it's, I'll include a link to one of our partners made a video explaining it. It's a virtual venue. So you move yourself around. And when you're not near someone, you don't hear them. When you're near them, you hear them. So it's fantastic for things like we have a fishbowl, which is an agile like conversation where you have five seats, but one's always empty. So people keep changing out. So for all of our workshops, including yours, all our talks are in Zoom meeting, not Zoom webinar, so that we can have both recorded and then unrecorded conversation afterwards. So everyone feels safe so they can have their camera off until they feel safe if they want to bring their kit. If their kids are still at home or if they just don't want to be on camera at all, they don't have to be. I think we're all burnt out from that. It was very interesting. And even for the keynote, I let Daniel Edmund talk about whatever he wanted to. He's great. And he's talking about creating systemic change through reconstructing masculinity and through the lens of not just sex or gender, but race, sexuality, things like that. So he'll bring everything in. Then it ended up being paired around themes. We have your choice. Each hour, there's either two talks back to back plus a discussion, two 20-minute talks, then a discussion, or you can do a workshop for 45 minutes. And then we also, you don't have to be there for the discussion. You can take a break. Everything we do on our online events, I've attended a lot of events that are nonstop, and that is insane to do to yourself too. The people that are running those events, that's really stressful. And it's really stressful for the individuals too, because you feel like you can't miss it. So we build custom breaks into everything we do. We encourage people to skip a session if they want to, but don't work. Go for a walk then, or a ride or a roll, or however you take your break. Close your eyes, take a moment to relax, breathe. Everything, it's very interesting, the topics we got, because if we did it, we just left it open around psychological safety, as you've seen very clearly in this conversation, it's very broad. So we have things from workshops on deep humane patterns for building psychological safety, building safety from tribal Africa, to yours. Yeah, it sounds really cool, right?
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, to yours. Yeah, yours with Nadia is about virtual and hybrid teams, because that is hard. And I think creating that feeling. We have three people from Container Solutions talking about balancing, or not talking about, workshopping about. So we go together balancing, how do you decide when someone needs to be accountable for something versus safe to fail? Because safe to fail, psychological safety, doesn't mean there's not consequences, or how to ask people to dance, creating safe, better spaces for more inclusive work, because that's the idea. There's a common phrase that diversity is inviting everyone to the party. Inclusion is actually inviting them to dance. And then I've also heard recently, equity is allowing everyone to pick a song to dance too. So make everything equal.
Yeah, great description. Never heard it before. But and then great visualization. Yeah. Great. Great. Yeah. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for this talk, interview, conversation about this topic. So we could, maybe we could do 20 podcasts and we're not done
topic. It's a huge topic, but we got to find a time to cut. I'll send you also to include in the show notes where people can sign up. It's a really inexpensive conference. I know most conferences are free, but those conferences are massive with massive sponsorship. We still have tools to pay for things like that. But you get access to this amazing, really small, intimate event where the speaker to attendee ratio is always very short, where everyone's part of a community, where you can network as much you want or as little. You still can be that fly in the wall. That's like a real event where you're just observing. That's totally fine. Or you can get as engaged as you want. And maybe you'll find your next job or your next business partner or something fun. But it's different things. Thank you so much, Nadine.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward doing the workshop on your at your event. And yeah, you'll see us on the June 11th for the Day of Cyclical Safety. Great. Jennifer, thank you so much. And
thank you so much. So
have a nice day in London. Hope you're safe. Yeah, but the weather is bad here too, so don't mind. stay safe. And yeah, thank you so much and see you. Bye.